Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. You probably knew all that. And welcome to today's show. We're going to have a nice one with our good friends from COSIN, the Consortium on School Networking. We're going to talk with Robert Duke, who's their Chief Operating Officer, COO, and Don Ringelstein, who's the CTO, Chief Technology Officer, at Maine Township Schools. Now, I live in Maine, but Maine Township Schools is in Illinois, and it's a township made up of, like, what do I have it here? Hold on, my old stomping grounds out there, Morton Grove, Glenview, Park Ridge, Niles, Des Plaines. Okay? So we're going to have a nice talk with them about the best IT practices for school districts, lessons really from their peer review system at COSIN. And COSIN's always coming up with some great things that sort of ensure that things work well and try to find out best practices, et cetera. So your CTO, et cetera, does not have to reinvent the wheel every time something goes on. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ACE-ED.org, ACE-ED.org. That's the home website of our Equity Consortium. Our magazine is over there, Equity and Access, which you'll love. You go over there, we publish every other month. New one will be out in a couple of weeks, the December issue. And then also, all of our podcasts are over there, and there's a link to our new website, SEL Today, all about social-emotional learning. So we got a lot of stuff over there. Check it all out, ACE-ED.org or SEL Today. org. And without further ado, Mr. Duke, you like to be called Robert or Bob? Which is your preference?
Robert is fine, thank you.
Robert is great, and call me Larry. And how you doing today, Robert? Where are you?
I'm doing great. It's a nice brisk day here in Washington, D.C.
Good enough. That's our nation's capital, last I heard. Everybody gets along, am I correct?
I heard that, too. Yes, everyone gets along very well.
Yes, and actually this week they are. It seems better this week. Okay, so hopefully they will be. Great to have you here, Robert. Thank you. Don, how are you?
Not bad, thanks. How are you, Larry?
I'm just fine, as a matter of fact. Again, I live in Maine, which has nothing to do with Maine Township. Okay, but for years I lived in Deerfield, which is close enough to say that where you are is my own stomping grounds just north of Chicago. Is that a good way to put it?
That's correct, yeah. We're right by O'Hare Airport, so if anybody's ever flown into O'Hare, they've flown over us.
Let me make the point, everybody has flown into O'Hare. At one point or another, everyone has flown into O'Hare. And Don, besides being the CTO over at Maine Township, this is Illinois, high school district, they have separate districts in many cases for high schools and elementaries, okay, and whatever. Okay, high school district number 127 in Illinois, and he's also president of COSIN's chapter in Illinois, which is called the Illinois Ed Tech Leaders Association, all right? Robert, I want you to help me out here and just explain. I went over to on COSIN.org, all right, then found the peer review. Tell everybody what that is. And on the website, okay, I think what you're trying to do on the website is get people to volunteer information. Is that correct? Help me out here. What's the whole purpose there? How's it work?
Sure. The COSIN peer review program has been around since 2016. We don't like to call it a tech audit because we're providing technical assistance to our members. It is a member-only resource. Think of it as a tech tune-up. We're going to come in. We're going to bring a team of two practitioners, active practitioners, from schools of a similar scale to your school district. They will talk with your stakeholders and determine how you are managing your technology. And then we will align that with a collection of best practices that we have, and let's share that information back. So we are just don't like the term audit because it tends to imply an investigation of sorts.
We don't need any more investigations. This is supposed to be helpful, okay? It's not an investigation.
Right.
It's helpful. We're not freeing you up from charges or anything like that, okay? It's good. So what you do is you go in to a given school district. Who do you talk to when you're there? Robert, I'll stay with you here.
We identify all the stakeholders that that really are involved in technology in a school district. And, you know, everyone touches technology. We can't possibly talk
exactly.
to everyone. Identify the leaders in each critical function. We do spend most of our time talking to people in the tech department and the instructional area because we want to make sure instruction is aligned with technology.
Absolutely. So you have the teachers, principals, et cetera, just to make sure everything works. And I must ask, Don, do you do this in a little? Are you one of the people they send in?
I am. Yeah, I've done, I don't know, Robert, how many have I done? 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And they're really helpful processes. And actually, I have an opportunity to learn from them, too, because, you know, coming in there, obviously I've been doing this a while, but, you know, I have an opportunity. You know, if I see things that I can, you know, use from those districts, too, I think it's an opportunity for us to educate each other.
I think so, too. And actually, I'm just going to stay on that theme. You've been doing this a long time, okay? And I know you're a young man, but you've been doing this a long time, okay? And just tell somebody something that you saw when you were doing one of these that just said, oh, my gosh, I could do this, too. I'm just curious to jump right on that. That's a great way to do it.
So there was a district in Ohio that we looked at whose leader was incredibly embedded with the instructional organization, with the instructional piece of the district. And I found that to be, you know, something that I'd really like to do a little bit more of. And so here at Maine, actually, I have an instructional technology specialist that works for me, but his job is also to kind of spread the good news of technology and help teachers integrate technology in their teaching. And you know, I took that best practice from that district that we visited in Ohio.
That's wonderful. And, you know, it's just so good stuff. And what do you find? I'll throw this to Don, but then we can swing to Robert. Don, what do you find are the most common themes that pop up K-12, okay, as you go in there? And, again, we're talking about the management of technology. So what are but you're talking to everybody in the district, and it's so wonderful, typical COSIN, COSIN.org. Tell me, what are the common themes, Don?
So what we find is really, in many cases, there's really good communications between pockets within the district. But in a lot of cases, you can expand that communication and make sure that, you know, teachers, for example, are on board with the pace of change that is going on from a technology standpoint. So that we've seen a couple of times. And it's really, I think it's really kind of emphasized the importance of really, really good communication channels between technology and the rest of the organization.
And has that changed, if I may, during the pandemic? Like all of a sudden, and parents have always been involved, but suddenly they were right on top of things. They've always been involved. They literally saw in their home the technology at work while their kids were home over the last couple of years, okay, year and a half, whatever. Has that communication now reached out to include parents as well, so they understand A, how the technology works, so the kids that doesn't say I don't have any homework tonight, okay, and B, because they are so involved, the school district always needs new stuff. It's good to get the community involved. How involved is the community in communications, Don?
So it really, you know, there's one side effect of the pandemic that I think has shown us another best practice in terms of supporting adults. So, you know, we're used to, you know, supporting students, you know, and you know, in some cases, well, in a lot of cases, you know, we support teachers and administrators. We haven't done as much of a good job, I mean, at least in most districts, of supporting parents. Now, part of how districts in Illinois, at least, responded to that was to open our doors to parents, but really more by that, I mean going out into the community, you know, meeting parents in spaces like parks, putting up Wi-Fi in our parking lots so that parents could bring students there to interact. But it also gave us an opportunity to educate parents and to help them troubleshoot technology issues, help them, you know, understand connections, things like that. So it was a great opportunity, and I'd really like to encourage us to continue doing that.
Yeah, I have a big smile on my face. You're saying during the pandemic, okay? You went out into the community, and the community kind of met with you at various places. You guys were all able to meet and talk and chat and get things together. Is that correct? That's wonderful. If I'm correct?
That's correct. Great. You know, again, I think that really helped us identify, you know, things that we need to do in the future. I mean, I think it helped us build stronger links to the community.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. As I said, I've got a big smile on my face. I heard that. I thought about that. Robert, you kind of oversee this, if I may, okay, over at COSIN. As you look at it, what have you learned from the peer reviews that you didn't know before? And I know you're a smart guy, but something must have come up.
You know, one thing that we've learned quite a bit overall, and we have published a report that is available on our website that does summarize some of these findings that we've, or common themes that we found.
Yeah.
So I would encourage anyone who has additional interest to go to our website and grab it. There's an executive summary that'll give it to you all in two pages. But we found, you know, one thing that surprises me is that a lot of school districts lack business continuity plan. If I were a school in Tornado Alley, I think that would be one of the first areas I'd focus. I'd definitely want a continuity plan. I will want to have tested it to make sure it actually works. And I really think that's an area where many schools need to focus. An additional area that they need to focus in is cybersecurity. And we could obviously talk all day on security, you know, an awful lot of schools are not prepared for ransomware. If something like that were to hit a school district, what do you do? You need to have a plan, even if it is private. You need to have some document that says what you do if you get attacked. So those are two of the more negative things that we found. But there's some positive things going on too, and I just want to circle back to the pandemic lessons. Disequity was in the spotlight as well. And we saw where districts were really paying attention there. They wanted to ensure that students had access to the Internet so they could do their remote learning from home. They invested in hotspots. That's one of the easier solutions. Some districts invested in LTE networks. Obviously, that takes a little longer to put together. And districts were assembling partnerships.
I'm going to stop you. Did you say LCE? Okay. Say that again.
LTE.
What kind of network?
LTE
what
networks.
Is
what there is was that? A district in California that said, we're going to cover the entire county with a network that would allow open Wi-Fi for their students. And they did it. Now, that takes a little longer to plan. But that, to me, is kind of on the higher end of what districts are doing to address the digital equity issue. And then
they actually did it. They got it done.
They were able to launch it. Yeah.
Wow.
And
impressive.
Districts also put together partnerships with local businesses to create safe spaces for students, you know, so they could go in and do their homework and that kind of thing remotely.
Yep.
If they didn't have good internet. So some created partnerships with cable companies. So we've seen a lot of positive things, positive ways that school districts have addressed the digital equity issue, which has been huge and been spotlighted as part of this pandemic.
It's incredibly huge, and it was the thing that came to the forefront at the beginning of the pandemic, that suddenly we've got this problem. We always knew it, but we were kind of always shoving it under the rug till next year, and finally next year hit for real, all right? And we really had to clean out from under that rug and get it right. And so, Robert, again, in your catbird seat, just as you look at the reviews, as you talk to various people, what kind of score do you give EdTech post-pandemic, school district EdTech, that's the only time that they said that. EdTech post-pandemic. Are we doing okay? Do you feel like most of the school districts are doing all right and have learned from this? Robert.
I think most have adapted pretty well. A lot of school districts were put in a position of going to full remote learning when some of them weren't ready. They had to quickly try to find laptops or Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And, as you know, that's that was difficult during the pandemic because all of a sudden we have a chip shortage and that kind of thing going on. So I think they've done pretty well, but we've also seen instances of where, school districts have, a lot of them have been underfunded and they haven't had the broadband they need to support remote learning.
So
they've had challenges. And now many have staffing challenges. So the saga
terrible.
Continues.
And actually, I want to make a point there. I'm a firm believer in educational tech or the use of technology in education. And we are having staff shortages in every area. And I know technology, we're not going to have a remote-controlled bus pretty soon, school bus pretty soon. Okay? But the whole idea of technology gives us a little more leeway. If, God forbid, we lose a staff member, we can somehow use technology in some way to make up for it. And please don't take that the wrong way, everybody, okay? But the technology helps, okay? And I'm just curious, has that, considering staff shortages and technology, all right, am I right on the, am I on that right track that technology is really more important than ever right now, especially concerning staff shortages? It strikes me that way. And I'll stay with Robert on that one.
I think there's one opportunity in interoperability, and that's an area where COSIN is
you got to handle
right.
That. Yeah.
That would eliminate some of the manual systems they have. If you can get all your systems to talk, and there's a price, there's a cost to that, then I think you could you would be more efficient. You would need fewer staff to download, upload between applications and those kinds of things. You'd also be more secure because you don't have all these spreadsheets lying around with, information on them that probably shouldn't get out. So there are some efficiencies that you could achieve if your systems were fully interoperable.
Yeah, and, you just used those two famous words. It's the old sales pitch. There's a big difference between cost and price. To have interoperability, there's a price, but the cost to not have it exceeds the price, okay? It's a tremendous cost, okay? And, Don, you're a big Mahoff in technology here, okay, head of the Illinois chapter, always involved with the national, et cetera. Where, in a district like yours, okay, where you're on top of stuff, okay, where are we on interoperability? You can be the shining example now, Don Ringelstein.
Well, I tell you,
the paradigm. The paradigm. I see you walking with a halo, an aura around your head, as the paradigm of interoperability. If this answer is the way I want it to go, go ahead. You may proceed.
Well, I tell you, it's a struggle. I mean, it always is.
I know.
Because as you bring in new systems and you integrate new processes or you make changes in existing systems, it really affects the way that data flows between applications. And so that's important. And I would suggest that, the magic behind the scenes is really only achieved by some hard work. So
yep.
That hard work in terms of making things work together. Now, in some cases, we have data warehouses that are available that can, either use a low-code or a no-code approach to bringing data together and making it making it intelligible for, stakeholders within the district. And
yep.
I see more districts moving towards that. In fact, I'm looking at them too.
Yeah, we all just got to keep moving forward. And I have to say these are all lessons from the pandemic. Okay, we knew we needed it prior to the pandemic, and all of a sudden we really needed it. Okay, so we're getting it together. So let me ask you this, Don. Okay, let's use your district, Maine Township High School, as an example. Okay, and I think this is really important. Okay, as you work in central administration, are you involved? And I would hope you would be. Okay, is it like part of the superintendent's cabinet? How's that work for you for in Maine?
Yes, I am. Yeah, yes, I am. And well, thank you. And,
it's like the TV show Succession. They put you on the board of directors. I'm
right.
Like this. Yeah.
Except we're not always stabbing each other in the back like they do in Succession.
And cursing every 2 seconds. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's important. In fact, that's a best practice that COSIN suggests is that you know, the technology leaders included in cabinet. And there's some important reasons for that, you know, and like you said at the beginning, Larry, you know, there's a district, the district is impacted by everything in technology. So it's really important for that technology leader to be there to be able to weigh in on those things.
It really is. And, you know, I keep using the term myself, ed tech, and really, you know, we never said ed chalk. That's my old line. Okay, mm-hmm. Technology is just embedded in education. We don't have to say ed tech anymore. It's just technology, and it's mm-hmm. there. And the technology leadership of a district, I mean, think about, you know, we mentioned before ransomware. Besides learning, ransomware, kids' security, all that sort of stuff, it's just all the personal records. I mean, it just boils down into this. What are you finding, Robert, what are you finding nationally in terms of including the EdTech directors, okay, as an integral part of the superintendent's cabinet? I would assume that's happening, but what are you finding out? Robert Duke.
Well, COSIN does an annual survey of EdTech leaders, and we found that 57% of school districts surveyed do have an EdTech leader in the cabinet. So I think school districts are recognizing the value of technology and making that happen.
They have to do that. I mean, it's that simple, okay? And I'm so glad to hear that's the case. It's just incredible. Well, so I want to get back to something that you mentioned before, and I just want to talk about this. And this is cybersecurity. That's always been popping up, okay, as the main thing these days. No pun on the word main there, Don. Okay, cybersecurity mitigation. Okay, what's happening across the board? I'm going to go to Robert on this one. Across the board on cybersecurity.
What we're finding is schools need to make a choice, and they need to invest in cybersecurity. And sometimes, you know, they're faced with making some awkward choices. But cybersecurity is a threat. And we found that the majority of districts dedicate less than 10% of their tech budget to cybersecurity. I think that needs
really?
To be flipped given the ongoing threat.
Wow.
Saying it needs to happen is very different from seeing it happen, obviously.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity insurance is also important because you need to be able to get your systems back, have the funding to make that happen if you do suffer an attack. And, you know, that's becoming something that's harder and harder to secure. I'll let Don say a little about that because, you know, he knows about it firsthand.
Uh-oh, Don?
Well, cybersecurity insurance organizations are really getting selective about who they insure. So we're increasingly, you know, having to talk about, you know, what kind of how we're mitigating, how we're protecting our information, how we're protecting our systems in order to just be covered. And even if you still get, you know, you're still covered, in a lot of cases, our prices are going up dramatically because insurance companies have been paying out, and you know, obviously they need to hedge their bets on that.
Absolutely. How often? And also, gentlemen, I'll ask Don. Maybe you know, there's 12,000 school districts, approximately. How many of them have been under attack? I'll say it that way, just from what you guys, what you know, Don. Do you know a fan? Just a number?
So I know. Well, not the entire. I know in Illinois, we've had a number of districts that have suffered crippling attacks. You know, there were some larger systems that were down for 2 weeks. Now, the good thing is that, you know, teaching and learning still happened. But if you think about it, the phone systems were down because our phone systems really rely on technology now, too. And if we don't have a network, we don't have phones. So it really impacts, you know, the entire organization. Now, the good news is again, you know, we can rewind back to the early 90s and teach how we did then. But it's obviously more onerous, and our kids don't have the access to resources that they would, and neither do our staff.
On average, and I don't know if you know this, Don, what does a what does a ransomware attack cost a school district if you don't have insurance? Do you know what I'm saying?
You know, industry averages are in the private sector, I mean, you can go up to $2 million.
Absolutely.
In the incidents, in our instance, it really the just locking everything up and the cost to recover it, you know, it's I would say, you know, around $50,000 is probably what it would look like. We had an incident here that we had to have insurance cover, but, you know, and again, the mitigation really took some time, but then again, the forensic investigation that went behind it was also expensive.
And who, do you know who did it? I mean, do you guys know who actually caused it?
Yeah, we don't. We had a couple of good leads, but this was happening from what we call a no-log VPN. So the VPNs don't have any logs about who's using them, and, you know, you just get this random IP address. So.
Wow. Well, welcome to the Ukraine. Go ahead.
There are things that schools can do better to prevent these types of things beyond, you know, insuring it and that kind of thing. We found that schools are actually pretty good at sending out the, you know, where you get a fake phishing email and you're lured into testing, clicking here when you're not supposed to. There are some good software programs out there that you can implement that will, you know, test your staff on their ability to identify a phishing email. However, we found that schools,
that's cool.
in many cases,
that's cool.
they don't follow it up with any formalized staff trainings. So they need to, you know, focus more on training their staff on, you know, how do I avoid not only phishing, but, you know, socialization where someone comes to you and tries to talk you out of a password and get in your network that way, or, you know, all kinds of things. They could do a better job of training their staff on that area. Another area where I think school districts need to focus is on the penetration testing, and that's where you hire an outside firm to hack into your network, and that should be done every 12 to 18 months. Only 34% of the districts in our latest survey were identified as doing this, and that number needs to get up as well.
Right. And I have to ask a question. When you guys do, and Robert, when you do a peer review and you go into the ABC school district, wherever it might be, just take a typical suburban district or whatever in Ohio, when you're done, I'm just curious across the board, you submit to them suggestions on how to approve it. Have you heard about the follow-up? Okay. You know, we want to encourage people to do this. Okay, and sometimes we get lost in the follow-up. What have you heard on that? I'm just want to get a sense of the good peer review you guys do. I know you do a good job. Robert.
We don't hear too much about the follow-up. I mean, where we leave it is we typically present to the leadership team, which is oftentimes the cabinet, so that are addressing the highest level of the school district. But beyond that, we do not get involved in follow-up. In fact, I call this program is really kind of a standalone in that incident, or in that instance, because you know, COSIN has no conflict of interest when it goes in to do a peer review.
Right.
We're not seeking follow-up consulting of any kind. So that's a plus on that side. But yeah, likewise, we're not real familiar with what happens after we leave.
Let me ask the question the other way with a smile on my face. As you present to them, do you usually see a really good reaction, or are they like, oh, my God, I can't believe you have to do this?
That's a very good question. Most of the time, we can look around the room, and I'll tell you, the last 2 years of doing this has been tough because we've been doing it remotely, and you can't look around the room very easily on Zoom. But face-to-face, you look around the room, and we will often see a lot of heads nodding. Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that. So oftentimes we're just highlighting things that people already knew.
Actually, though, that's very
good. Robert.
They already knew that, but they don't act on it until somebody gives them a good kick in the behind. Okay, I like that. It's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. Who was saying something a minute ago? Don?
Well, I was just going to add, too, that when we do present those findings, we also make sure that we point out the good things that they're doing too. So in that way, you know, we can do some recognition of the district, but we can also then say, hey, here's some other areas you need to work on.
And, you know, guys, I want to ask you something else, because a lot of the districts are small, okay? And, you know, they get together with an educational service agency. Perhaps it's a BOCES in New York, one of those groups, okay? And I'm curious, when you go in and do a peer review, do those things come into play, Robert, the ESAs? I know they do a lot of work in technology.
We have never done a review for an ESA, but we have used ESA staff members as a part of our review team.
Okay, because it's something that should be considered, because I know that a lot of the districts are very dependent on them for the technology. The smaller districts in rural areas especially, it's really, really important. Gentlemen, first of all, Don, do you have anything more you want to add before we wind down here? Don?
And you know what? I do want to just reemphasize Robert's point around the phishing testing and doing things like that. You know, we call it social engineering. There's all kinds of ways that people can be socially engineered. I've been doing it for 5 years. So between social engineering training and patch management on your systems, you can eliminate a good amount of your cybersecurity threats.
It's good to know. It's good to know. And the peer review, okay, people could just get in touch. Should they just get in touch with COSIN at COSIN.org? Is that the best way to do it, Robert?
We have a great website that tells you all about the peer review. And
you
if
do.
They want to learn more, they can contact me at rduke@COSIN.org.
Yeah, and rduke, R-D-U-K-E, like the university, okay, @COSIN.org. Gentlemen, thank you so much, okay? And both of you, it's next week. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a good one. Have a good turkey.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. Take care, gents. Be good. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. I love doing shows with COSIN. I always learn a lot. Okay, we all take the ed tech for granted. You know, and there's so much that goes into it to make it safe for everybody. Okay, with every teacher trying to bring in every app and every kid working at home half the time and, you know, networking all this stuff and keeping people safe. Okay, and all this time, all that in the background, while the whole idea of the technology is for teaching and learning. It's really an interesting thing. COSIN.org, C-O-S-N, COSIN.org. Everybody will archive over at ace-ed.org. That's the pirate website. This is ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening.